Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:10 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 8th. Well, oil prices pulled back rather sharply in here today. Brent crude was down $2.40, so it's coming right back down to the lows we saw in July. That was on the back of China saying that they're going to stop, they're not going to stop importing it. They're just going to put duties on imports of energy products from the USA. But they're still going to have to buy the energy from somewhere. It's not as if they're simply going to go cold turkey on LPG or our LNG or oil imports, or indeed gasoline. So this would appear to me at least to be an overreaction, unless one were to conclude that it's going to result in lower economic growth, which would translate into less demand for oil. But the much bigger picture is the simple fact that oil prices have been in a process of mean reversion for the last 6 or 7 weeks, and they have almost completed it. It is, I think, an important coincidence that the trend mean is now currently in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. So we're coming back to an area which is a potential area where we might anticipate support being found. Well, there is obviously the condition that oil prices are volatile, and we are in a heightened geopolitical environment. We could have an upset in terms of the trend. And I think the most important point is that there's a great deal of additional supply becomes economic in the order in the region of about $70 in the USA and probably about $75 to $80 everywhere else. Well, against that background, we also have the fact that Venezuela is disintegrating, and that is taking some heavy crude off the market. So that is, I think, a fundamental support which has helped us to get up to these levels. But as long as the region of the trend mean is holding, this is still a reasonably consistent advance. And I think that's the real big takeaway from the price action that we have at the moment. Now, when we look at what's going on then between China and the USA, well, if we think about the last 30 years, it was, an environment which might be characterized as play along to get along. And that now appears to be over. If we think about globalization and the global economic order and the global logistics network, then the best way to think about it, in my opinion at least, is that it's play along to get along. If we don't ask any questions, we're not going to have any untoward answers. And there has been an incentive just to look past differences of opinion. Well, we're starting to see some of those differences of opinion coming back to light as trade tensions ramp up. And just a microcosm of what we're seeing on the global stage is what's happening between Saudi Arabia and Canada. Canada is largely energy independent. And of course, it competes with Saudi Arabia in the energy markets. Well, Saudi Arabia saying that withdrawing their diplomatic corps from Ottawa and expelling the ambassador from Riyadh, and then also starting to sell some of their Canadian holdings. Well, that highlights just how acute this deterioration of the play along to get along infrastructure is deteriorating here. Now, let's have a look at what's going on in China, because there has been a great deal of volatility over the last few months, and the market has been trending lower just about all year. We had the first sign of an upward dynamic yesterday, and we did not have follow through in here today. The A shares were down, but so far they are still holding the low, and it wasn't a particularly dynamic move. What is important is that the banking sector has got two higher reaction lows. And as long as that remains the case, well, we can give some credence to the argument that support building is underway. What I think is worth keeping an eye on are the B shares in Shenzhen, because there aren't any banks in this index, and it had got right back down to test the lower side of what is effectively a 3-year range, and it has just begun to steady. But that 1,000-point level needs to hold, and it is really just barely steady around these levels. Now, the B shares have, I think, classically been considered the bastion of the privately held companies. But of course, one of the defining characteristics of fascism is corporatism, where independent corporations or privately held corporations are only tolerated insofar as they're supportive of the administration's both domestic and international goals. And that is problematic for stock market investors because it removes the profit goal and replaces it with policy goals. And well, that's not why people invest in shares. So that's one of the, I think, one of the, this, the considerable headwinds that you have for the Chinese stock market. Well, the H shares index in Hong Kong has at least been able to follow through on yesterday's advance, and we do have now a very short-term higher reaction low. But golly, this index has got a lot of work to do, and this has been a considerable deterioration. So there is potential for a reversion back towards the mean, which would potentially add an additional 600 points to the index. But then the big question is whether it's not going to find support, resistance in the region of that trend mean, which is now, I think, meaningfully turning downwards. Then, when we look at what's going on Wall Street, well, it was a pretty quiet day. The S&P 500 was pretty much unchanged. It's right in the region of the peak that we saw back in January, so it's a natural area where people are beginning to ask, well, what's next? I think the most important point is that we had a very rapid reversion to the mean following a mild acceleration towards into that peak that we saw in January, and that has held up the market now for 6 months. Well, a medium-term correction can hold up the market for anything between 6 months and 2 years, and the fact that the Nasdaq has broken out is, I think, supportive of the view that this consolidation that we have on the S&P 500 is probably going to be on the shorter side of that 6 month to 2 year time horizon. The Russell 2000 has also been able to break on the upside over the course of the last few months, and it continues to hold this move above the 1600 point level. As long as it's doing that, well, then we still have these medium-term ranges one above another, and as long as that's the case, well, it would be hard to argue that we have top formation development evident. And I think it is important to keep an eye on the banking sectors, and particularly their relative performance to each other, because the US banks have now rallied to break their progression of lower rally highs and have bounced from the region of the trend mean. So this is still trending higher. But when we look at Europe, well, you really do have to you'd have to be brave to really suggest that this is a low of anything other than short-term significance, that you've had a pretty substantial deterioration. In fact, if you look at it over the last decade, there's still a progression of lower rally highs. And there is a lot of work to do. And this is all against the background of the ECB pulling back from its purchasing program. And we're only a month away from them stopping their quantitative easing purchase program. Well, that's going to represent a challenge for European stock markets, and that's, I think, part of the reason why they're not really going anywhere. So, for example, the DAX index has been largely range-bound for more than a year, and it really does need to continue to hold that 12,000 level. Well, the FTSE 100 in the UK has been somewhat better, and it was in additional positive territory in here today, but it is certainly getting a tailwind from the weakness of the pound. and the pound was in additional negative territory in here today. So this is continuing to extend its decline. And when we zoom in and look at that on a daily basis, well, we can see that there's a rivetingly consistent progression of lower rally highs, that there is a clear downward bias to the dynamics that we see on the chart. There is a short-term oversold condition, so it is not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we could see a bounce in here, but at least a move above 132 would be required to question the overall downward bias. And of course, this is all because of political uncertainty. And because we're in August and the vast majority of Europe's politicians are on holiday, well, that suggests that we are going to have some volatility in some of these currency pairs. And when we look at what's going on in Italy, well, the Prime Minister is saying that they're going to go slowly, slowly on their reforms, but that is probably not what the leaders of the League or the Five Star Movement want to hear. And the government bond yield is currently around 2.9%. This range has the characteristics of a first step above the base. It does look rather unlikely that we're going to see the yield back below 2%. And there is the real possibility that it will move on the upside from here. And the extent to which that occurs is probably also going to be politically motivated and will, I think, be very much dependent on how the Italian budget is put together and just what they want to negotiate with the EU. If the negotiations with the UK are any guide, the EU has a tendency to be rather intransigent. Then when we look at what's going on in Japan, well, wages are breaking out on the upside, but the yen has been steadying up in here, and then you have the Nikkei, which was has not yet been able to sustain them back above 23,000. When we look at that on the weekly basis, we can see that this does continue to look like a consolidation above, well, mostly above the trend mean, and it would really require a sustained move below the trend mean to really question the overall upward bias. I think by far the most important characteristic that we have in the Japanese market is that it has broken out to new 20-year highs, and the almost defining characteristic of the bear trend was that every time it got up to 20,000 over the course of the last almost 30 years, that it went to a new low, and that ended in 2016. So in the absence of a decline below 20,000, we can conclude that Japan is back in a new bull market. But people are beginning to ask exactly what we're going to see with the dollar. And when we look at it versus the yen has been strengthening up over the course of the last 4 weeks. And the dollar is now coming back to test its progression of higher reaction lows. Now, when we look at the dollar index, it has it looks to be consolidating above the trend mean, but it's right at the upper side of its range, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today. Now, there is the big question, I think, here, and it was a point that I saw a news story earlier on talking about this possibility suggested by JP Morgan, that the USA could use the dollar as a policy tool in terms of its trade war versus China. And the dollar has been quite firm, but I think we do need to look at that firmness in some form, some kind of perspective, that the dollar had been trending lower for all of 2017, and it has now recouped less than half of that decline so far. If the dollar were to get the dollar index were to get back up towards 100, well, that's when I suspect we might see some action to try and weaken the dollar. But so far, this has been a reasonably consistent, or at least inert range. There hasn't been a great deal of volatility inside it. We may see some steadying by other currencies versus the dollar over the course of the next couple of weeks, but really a sustained move back below the trend mean would be required to really suggest that we're getting anything other than some consolidation in the dollar. And if that's the case, well, gold prices really are quite oversold in here, and they were able to reverse an earlier loss to finish just about unchanged, really. But we can see clearly that there has been a progression of lower rally highs, very clear over the course of the last seven sessions. So it's going to have to break its progression of lower rally highs to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Well, we know that the price is right in the region of $1,200, and that has acted as an area of support on at least a few other occasions since early 2016. And there is a rather wide overextension relative to the trend mean evident. But it's got a lot of work to do to really suggest that we have got a low coming in of more than short-term significance. It really is for the bulls to prove in here. Now, silver, on the other hand, has been less dynamic on the downside. It's been largely range-bound since the middle of July. And silver prices around that 16, or excuse me, $15 area have bounced on multiple occasions since the beginning of 2016. So there is the potential for the price to bounce once more, but that potential also has to be considered against the background of a progression of lower rally highs since the middle of 2016. And it's really that progression of lower rally highs currently, with the most recent of those peaks around the $17 area, that would need to be broken in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment for silver. And platinum prices, which had been pulling back in a rather dynamic manner, are steadying at least above the $800 area. Well, $800 represented the lows in 2008 and in 2016. And considering the discount that's currently available on platinum versus gold, this is really not a bad time to be going out and buying platinum jewelry. It really should be. It's never, if when you go to a jeweler's, it's never cheaper than gold, but it really should be. Even with the fact that it's sold at a higher purity and that it has a higher density, it should still be cheaper than gold with this kind of discount. And the fact that the price has started to go sideways will be unwinding some of this overextension relative to the trend mean, but it really does need to push back above the $900 area to suggest that we're getting a failed downside break coming in here. Now, I'm posting a report in Comment of the Day today from Raymond James talking about the difference in performance between value and growth strategies. And I think it is important to realize that ETFs, particularly those that follow market cap weighted indices, are essentially momentum strategies, because they concentrate on the largest shares that have done best, because those are the ones that dominate market cap weighted indices. So they're essentially momentum driven strategies, whereas value really does tend to do best in a distressed environment. It's when you've had contagion selling and everything has, the essentially the baby has been thrown out with the bathwater. So that's when value really comes into its own, because it's when really good fundamental analysis can identify shares that are undervalued relative to their net present value. And therefore, that's when cashed up value investors can move in, pick up attractive assets at really good prices, and then hold them for the medium term. But the problem with that strategy right now is that there are companies that value strategies are looking at where there is the potential that you have a value trap. So, for example, Nielsen has fallen from $55 to $21, and collapsed 3 weeks ago, and it is barely steady around the $20 area. But it has a free cash flow yield that is very attractive. It has been raising its dividends for a considerable amount of time, and well, considering the depth of the decline, one could have to consider that they're going to cut the dividend. But I think when you look at their their free cash flow. They're doing approximately 1.1 billion on a $7 billion market cap. So that's a free cash flow yield in the order of 15%. And that holds out the prospect that they could potentially be able to hold their dividend. But the market is pricing it as if the company is going to go out of business. And one has to begin to at least consider the possibility that that may indeed be the case, because Netflix is not really covered by the kind of ratings that cable companies have been looking at. And that is the big question for value in the present moment. That on the one hand, they do look for these kinds of distressed situations, but on the other hand, there is the real risk that they could get caught up in these value traps. So when people are thinking about what they're going to buy, well, it's when the whole market pulls back in a very dynamic manner that value really comes into its own. But if you were to ask people which one is going to come out on top, is it going to be Netflix or Nielsen? I think at the moment people would probably conclude that it'll probably be Netflix. Nevertheless, an acceleration on the downside is a trend ending, and it's a trend ending of at least short-term significance. Quite whether it represents the bottom is another question entirely. But Nielsen has potential to rally back up towards the mean, whereas Netflix has been in a process of mean reversion for most of the last 3 or 4 weeks. And now the question is whether it's going to be able to hold the low that it put in last week. So I think we are at a rather interesting position in the market. There are some bargain type opportunities coming through, and we are seeing some consolidation within the technology sector. And that is, I think, starting to throw some interest back onto what might be considered defensive sectors. So utilities have been really rather steady and are pushing back above the trend mean, and the consumer staples sector has bounced pretty impressively, but it was in negative territory in here today. So therefore, the big question now is whether they can continue to hold the bounces that they have put in, and whether that is going to be considered a pair's trade relative to the fate of the Nasdaq. Well, the Nasdaq index has been reasonably steady over the last few sessions, and it's right in the region of its trend mean. It has unwound all of the decline that we saw following the pullback that we saw on Facebook. Facebook prices were up in a pretty dynamic manner in here yesterday, but I think it is at a point where it is going to need some time to convalesce. That we have had two sharp stabs to the downside in so far this year, and what that suggests, at least to me, is that there's a medium-term peak is now evident in Facebook, and the best scenario would be that we get some period of ranging, which could last for more than a year, before we see I think support enough for a retest of the highs. That it would, I think, be the best case scenario. The worst case would be that it fails to hold this low put in last week, and that we get a substantial break of the uptrend. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.